Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art that is a work of art in itself.
And welcome back to you, John.
Just rolled off the tongue, didn't it, Will?
Yeah, did. You do so much better job than Mark. It's only lucky that he's running late and not in the studio
at the moment. I've been practicing all week just to make sure that I do so much better job than Mark.
Fantastic. We also have the fabulous Will Bailey in here with us this morning, who's going to add a little something to
our I'm going to do my best. Good morning, John.
Good morning, Will. Sally.
Yeah. Mark is running late. Last I heard, he was in his bath, so we do expect him in at some point.
I can just imagine him getting out of the bath and shouting for the man with the towel to come and help him.
Yes, yes. I hope the man with the towel was ready. What are you going to talk to us about today, John? Is it going to be your adventures up at Mount Beauty, perhaps?
No, my adventures when I got back, really. I want to talk about Gareth Sampson and the horrible show.
Oh, is it a horrible show? I've been reading about that. What's it called? Transformers or something?
It's good horrible.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yes, okay. So. Great. Okay, I'm looking forward to that because I've been very interested.
I was going to talk about being up in the mountains and, Will, you've been fond of snow skiing, I'm sure, in the past.
Well, in the old days, I used to like to have a dash on the slopes.
I went up to Mount Hotham to pick up my daughter Rose, and when I got up there, it was a bright sunny day, not a breath of wind, there was metres of snow, and no one there. I could park the car outside the ski hire joint, which was over the road from the nearest tow point, and it was extremely easy to go skiing, which I did, because I couldn't resist it in those conditions.
Gosh, that's incredible.
I'm still wearing the back brace.
Well, it sounds perfect. I mean, it's school holidays now, of course, but they're not normally skiing at this time of the year.
It's
nearly October.
There is so much snow that I think it's terrifying for people at the bottom of the hill.
Oh, really?
Because it's all going to melt at some stage.
And when will you be able to get your car back? Is that still buried in snow?
There's plenty of cars up there under snow.
You've had some pretty good adventures, actually, coming to think about it, in the snow, haven't you, Will? Like almost decapitating film stars and
all kinds of stuff. Look, that's for another day,
I reckon.
Yeah, perhaps when we have Will on.
Film stars.
Maybe I could talk
about... Wasn't Gina Lollobrigida, was it?
I wish it was. It was Clint Eastwood I bumped into in the snow once. Nearly took his head off.
Anyway, Will and I are heading off at the end of this. We're actually leaving as we finish this show today. We're off on an adventure to Alice Springs to see Midnight Oil up there, which we're pretty excited about. Mark obviously will be telling us something amazing later on if he makes it in here. And as well, we're also going to be talking to Tom Polo. And Tom's an artist who is already painting on the walls of the MPRG. With permission, of course. He's been invited there to create an exhibition called These Things Tell Me More About You. So he's going to chat with us about that a little bit later on.
From the MPRG?
From the MPRG, yeah.
Good.
So while we get him on the phone, here is a band called The Breeders with a track called Driving on Nine. Artist Tom Polo's paintings tackle the human condition and anxieties and insecurities hidden therein. And he's pretty hot property at the moment. He was winner of the 2015 Brett Whiteley Travelling Art Scholarship and finalist of the 2016 National Works on Paper and is this year's finalist in the Suleiman Prize. At the invitation of the MPRG, Tom's been down in the secret recesses of the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery's collection and has begun painting his impressions of the collection in a 13-metre mural on the walls in the foyer titled Tell Me More About You. It's not his first durational artwork the Sydney-based artist has created. Last year, he painted a work called What Goes On Here over 10 days at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, translating conversations with staff, members and visitors into the gallery into images and text. Next. This time he's turned his eye upon the permanent collection at the MPRG and has been picking out the eyes of the collection of more than 1,600 pieces that stretch back in time to the 1800s and include a lot of work focusing on the cultural heritage of the Mornington Peninsula. We're very lucky to have him on the phone with us today and thrilled he's taken a moment from this mammoth task to talk to us this morning. Good morning, Tom Polo, and welcome to Arts About.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. It's great to have you. Tom, what will we hear about in Tell Me More About You? Who's doing the telling?
I think it's actually a conversation that is quite back and forth, really, because I think as an artist, my job is to respond to things, but of course I'm going to bring with that a whole bunch of, you know, prior knowledge or kind of inquiry or just a general sense of wanting to find out more and as much about things as I can. So while I'm looking into the collection, I'm also sort of bringing with it my own histories and my own experiences. So I think it's an extension of a portraiture, So both in terms of Mornington, the collection, the people who work at the gallery, the people who come and visit the gallery, as well as sort of my own self too.
What is the process?
So it's been a really nice kind of process leading up to being here in Mornington this week. So with curator Danny Lacey here at the gallery and myself, he invited me to come into this, having seen sort of prior projects that I've done, where I've been invited into a situation where there is a hive of activity, if it's either sort of happening in front of us as we speak or into a collection to be able to respond to work. So kind of the way I respond to things is quite loose in terms of it might be going in and noticing little nuances within artworks themselves, the way that they are framed, their context, kind of the way that they're described in their wall text or their plaque, you know, that sits with the work. And all of those things, I think, really inform us about what artists are thinking, what was happening in the world at the time, how artworks are positioned, what's included, what's excluded, you know, a whole range of things, really.
Mm.
So more than just what's in front of us, really.
Yeah, okay. Have you had much of a chance so far to go through the work?
Yeah, so I arrived last week, and through the process of quite actually sifting through, but you know, it's an amazing experience to be able to, as an artist, to get to look at a very specific type of history, but one that is quite wide. So I quite actually was going through drawers, you know, plan drawers full of amazing drawings and prints and all sorts of things, as well as pulling out the racks within the gallery too, and just discovering the breadth of the collection, both historical and contemporary as well. So in addition to that, I was kind of going through a database that's online as well, digital, just as a way of finding out all the details around the work, when it was acquired, how it was acquired, was it donated, was it purchased, did it come through the National Works on Paper Prize. You know, there are a whole range of ways that the works have come to be in the collection of the gallery.
Mm. I mean, it's actually fascinating to think for somebody like you to be looking at it in such a way. Can I ask you what you think of it? What do you think of the collection?
Well, there's certainly lots of gems, some which haven't been seen publicly for a very long time,
mm-hmm.
and others that are more popular as well. I've really noticed that as you mentioned in the introduction, there is a real focus on things that are about Mornington or artists who historically have worked in the Mornington Peninsula region, but also, a real nice survey of fantastic artists through history too, from someone like John Brack to one of my favourites, Jenny Watson, Brent Harris as well. There's a really lovely little Noel McKenna and a Sydney Nolan. Yeah, it's quite nice to have come into this project and found like quite a few of my favourite works.
Mm. So, I mean, it's very interesting what you're doing, because it's really quite a cross-genre piece in a way that you're creating at the MPRG. I want to call it performance art. What do you call it?
Well, there's definitely a sense of performance within it. The way that I go about creating these installations or these wall works, as I call them, is that none of it's pre-planned, and so it's happening as I'm thinking and as I'm exploring. So it's a little bit like I'm in my studio behind the scenes. But in this instance, I'm actually working in a space that people can come and interact with me. So people come in from the outside, as well as stopping and talking to staff who are also installing other exhibitions that are happening at the time, or kind of engaging with me to help me hang the works or the works within the show too. So I feel like it's this real wholesome process of working between what's in my head to what I'm being sort of nudged or kind of prodded with from the outside to what ends up being on the wall. You know, what's included and what's excluded is a really interesting process.
Tom?
Yes?
John Baird, I'm just curious to know about the process of painting in public, and the gallery will be open while you're painting, and people coming in and watching what you're doing. I don't know about all artists. I know about a number of them working in the studio, and it's really a process of fixing up things that you've mucked up. And is that something that it's okay to do in front of a whole lot of people? I would feel very uncomfortable with people sort of witnessing my incompetence, actually.
Well, it's funny because, you know, like you, I have a very private studio. Having said that, I don't mind if people, you know, colleagues and friends or curators and visitors sometimes come in. But of course, like, there are those things that you're really happy to show off, and then those things that maybe you choose to, like, hide if someone's coming to visit that you're not quite ready to reveal. This puts me in the deep end, I have to admit, and I kind of like that feeling that it really disrupts the usual process of artists, you know, like yourself and myself working within the studio context, sort of the kind of underground, lonely genius, as I kind of think, can be disrupted. I think that there's it's okay to show that artists do really mundane things in their practice.
Well, it's part of that's part of it, but also you'll presumably be revealing some of your tricks.
Exactly, that too. And I think it's kind of nice to show that art can be approachable, and that it is it's approachable from many different levels, you know, like from seeing the way that an image is created to a mistake and the very kind of boring task of maybe even like repainting over something in order to kind of get it back to white, to square one. So I think when I started doing these projects, in addition to, you know, my usual practice using, you know, painting on canvas and for exhibitions, I think I realised that this was something that I had to let go of, and it's slightly, I don't know, maybe a hyperbole to say, but quite invigorating to think that I can do that. So, yeah, it's been nice to kind of just challenge myself, really.
I'll pop down and have a look.
Yeah, you should. But you can, and the thing is, I'm letting those conversations with people who are coming down to see the work in a way. You know, if someone has something to say about kind of what I'm doing, then I'm okay with it affecting the next step. I think all of my work and a lot of what artists do is about process. One thing leads to the next until you feel like the resolution or you're comfortable with the outcome.
So if you're revealing your processes and letting people see how it is that you go about this, is the next step handing over the brush?
You know, I've done that before, actually.
Oh, have you?
not yet in this case, but I've only sort of just started painting on the wall over the last day and a half. But I think, yeah, I have done that before. In fact, when I was at the art gallery, from time to time, while I went on off for, you know, a lunch break or something, I gave the invigilator the brush and either a specific sort of task, because I kind of think this work, like I said before, this work is more than just about me, and more about the collection. It's about the people who inhabit that space. The history of just the, you know, the volunteer guides alone within a space like this is so incredible, and the wealth of knowledge that they have that I don't as a visitor, and I'm completely completely open to that being an important and significant part of the project.
There's a long history, of course, of handing over the brush within the studio to various sorts of assistants.
For sure.
In describing your work, like, there's portraiture, caricature, text, and there's lots of vivid colour, but there's a lot more to than just the literal imagery in your work. How do you describe the subject matter of your art in general?
So you kind of hit on that idea of performance before, and I think that's a nice place to think about the way that we perform our kind of daily lives and the way that the relationships form through those interactions. So if my work kind of is hitting on an idea of conversation, that might be something that I've engaged in myself or I've overheard, or tapping into something that is happening in a kind of wider context, both socially, politically, culturally. I take those as like little conversations or little starting points, and from there the work starts to grow outwards. So it might be just like a little kind of instigator that then really kind of takes it forward. So yeah, I use a lot of text and extensions of portraiture within my work. Like you said, they are reflecting on ideas of persona and caricature, and the way that those almost act as masks or facades within social experiences.
Mm-hmm. How do you think you change people's perceptions of art by them seeing you create it? I mean, do you think you change it?
Yeah, I think that there is a... I think when people sort of see the process, they realise that a lot more goes into kind of the final outcome than they ever imagined. I think being able to see that, you know, even me just being here working with the curators to decide about where things might go, hanging them, putting the screws in the right place, getting that right colour, painting something with a few different coats so it's extremely, you know, like the two colours vibrate against each other. I think often we kind of take for granted the things that look seemingly simple and, you know, abstraction and works that maybe rely on what seems to be simple actually have a lot more complex things going on.
Mm. Well...
Yeah. Can I just interrupt?
Yes, Mark Stewart's just joined us too, Tom.
Hi, Tom. My name's Mark Stewart. Do you know the light bulb joke, the artist and the light bulb joke?
Oh, no,
a specific one?
Yes.
You'll have to tell me.
How many artists did it take to change a light bulb?
Yeah, how many?
10. One to change a light bulb and 9 others to say, oh, I could have done that.
Yeah, exactly. It's so easy to kind of go with that viewpoint, isn't it? And I think the more people that fight against that or kind of continue to make the work that they feel they want to make, as opposed to maybe what might be seemed popular or only about labour and time, I think is really...
What you're doing, which is important, is to acknowledge what's happened before you and to encourage people to look into that.
Definitely, and I think my preference is to think about things like time and about space in really fluid ways. You know, it is the means of how much time I've actually got to create this project is essentially creating what is on the wall. So when Thursday comes for the public opening, that's when I pull down my brush. And I think that being okay with that is much about the process as kind of knowing what it might look like. You know, there's a space in between there that I have to be comfortable with as part of this process.
Well, Tom Polo is down there at the moment at the MPRG painting Up a Storm, it sounds like. I'd be really interested to go down there and see it, Tom. Thanks for talking to us today. I think the work is going to remain there until the end of November, so if you don't get a chance to see Tom actually working down there, you can certainly still go. There's plenty of time to go down there and have a look at the work. Thank you so much for talking to us today about it, Tom. I hope you enjoy it, and we're really looking forward to seeing what comes out of it.
Great. Thank you so much for having me. Enjoy your day.
Thank you. You too. Bye.
Thanks, Tom.
Now, this is a beautiful track called Desert from a group called Desert Sessions, or it's actually titled Desert Sessions, and this is a track called I Want to Make It With You. It's come out of these a series of fabulous generator parties, they were called, in Palm Spring, in the Palm Desert in California. And, by guitarist Josh Holm.
And now it's time for John On.
Thank you, Swanee. Where to start? You know, there's a few things that I'd like to talk about, but I think now that Mark has arrived, I'll start essentially by suggesting, Mark.
Yes, John.
That even though some idiot has decided that the Val d'Aosta is not a painting of the Val d'Aosta at all. And that it's got some other title.
Falls of Schaffhausen.
Doesn't take anything away from the painting itself. You can call it whatever you want.
I totally agree, John. It's a bit of a joke, really. I just thought that was fascinating that you should, you know, be so enamored of this painting called the Val d'Aosta, which is no longer called that.
Yeah, well, I'll still call it the Val d'Aosta because I like saying it.
Yes.
And people
well, this
say,
is
what
go
painting
on
are you talking about, John?
Now, I've been up at Fed Square, Mark, and I went and saw the Gareth Sampson show, and presumably you've seen that as well.
Yes.
Gareth, in the foyer of Fed Square at the moment, actually, is some Akio Makagawa sculptures, which...
Not just the foyer.
But in the foyer outside of the Gareth Sampson show. And the Makagawa exhibition... sculptures are particularly sublime, I think. He had a great way of narrowing things down to the sublime. And leaving that and going into the Gareth Sampson horror show is something completely different. Gareth Sampson is not a man to be ignored. The paintings, as I said earlier, I think the whole show is horrible, but good horrible.
What do you mean by that?
I mean that the way his approach to painting is that he's a regurgitator. He spews up stuff onto a panel or a painting of some sort, and then he'll undergo the process, one presumes, of tidying it up aesthetically. And sometimes he does that successfully, other times not so much. But the whole show is frighteningly full of the inner workings of his own brain, really, and it's not a pretty sight at times. The paintings, I think, I would love to live with a Gareth Sampson painting, but I couldn't live with more than one of them. It's the whole show is, when it's all viewed together, is really quite difficult to cope with. Well, I found it difficult to cope. So how'd you go with it, Mark?
Well, John, you've just taken away my whole conversation, time here. Thank you very much. So,
Well, you should have got out of the bath and come and spoken to me before.
Look, they changed the time and the studio. The whole thing's a little bit confusing today. This is the Gareth Sampson, which you saw.
What's it called, the exhibition?
Transformer.
That's right. And it's on the ground floor, isn't it?
It's a retrospective of the last 15 years. It's on the ground floor, and it's a very beautiful exhibition. But I had exactly the same experience as you. There are a couple of sublime paintings, one of which is on the cover, which is very Baconesque.
Yeah.
And coming out of that to the Akira Magawa, sort of his
Makagawa.
Name. Makagawa. Was exactly the same feeling coming down to this sort of pared down, beautiful stone sculpture and steel sculpture was just, for me, the real experience of art. Whereas with Sampson, it was a you're inundated.
Well, he's not afraid of making it quite clear where his influences are coming from.
And dressing up like his mum.
Dressing up like his mum, yeah. Well, some people like
good
doing
influence,
that.
Yeah.
And he uses a process in part of the painting of collaging photographs onto paintings and then painting a background around them and changing the profile or the outside of someone's head or the shape of things, which is a very Francis Bacon
and
approach.
Brett Whiteley.
And Brett Whiteley.
The whole collage thing.
Brett picked it up from Francis Bacon
also,
as well. And those particular images, I think, are the most successful of them. And it's not because of their quietude. It's just because they have... I think they're a little more sincere. Some of the big paintings lack sincerity in that they're very brazen and brash.
Are you talking about the later ones or the...
all of them.
Well, I haven't seen it, but I've seen some of the images online, and I have to say, you know, that I absolutely picked up on those references to Bacon and Whiteley. I think they're really obvious. And, you know...
And the whole English pop movement, actually.
Yeah, which feeds into that thing that Dr. Gabe and Will used to do, the profound thread, the linking of all artists and that story that runs through everybody's art and being able to see those influences.
The other... in regard to all of that, Gareth Sampson was the head of the painting school at VCA for some years, about 6 or 7 years, I think.
Does he live? He lives down on the peninsula, does he not?
He lives in Sorrento.
Okay.
He doesn't go down the shops, though, apparently. I've never seen him down there.
No.
That's all I do, hang around the shops.
Yes.
Licking ice creams.
But Gareth, as the head of the art school at VCA, meant that I think he's the kind of person who would have pushed his particular concerns and his particular styles onto the people who are educated at the VCA during that time. And you can see it in Melbourne painting. You can see it across what happened in Melbourne painting for that time.
You can see his influence.
Yeah, absolutely. And anyone who is familiar with painting in Melbourne and go and see the Gareth Sampson show will immediately understand what that is about and what that means.
You've got the little book here. How long does it run for, Mark?
Till the 28th of January.
Oh, okay. So it's there for a while. We all get a chance to and look at it.
I mean, ultimately, I think that people... You know, we had Tom on, Tom yep. Polo, just before, and Tom was talking about artists like Noel McKenna and Jenny Watson and those sorts of artists. Not sure that they were studied under Gareth Sampson, but they all come to the same conclusion, I think, which is that art has something to do with a sort of charming incompetence. And I think that Tom Polo probably works in much the same sort of area. I'm not suggesting that they're not, that they don't know what they're doing. I'm suggesting that they know absolutely what they're doing, and that the incompetence that they have in result is in fact what we're all charmed by. Mm-hmm.
This is it reminds me of Philip Guston.
Guston is there in Gareth Sampson.
Yeah, absolutely. Turning something into a sort of a caricature in a way. Make it look like, well, there was also that period of bad painting in the 80s.
I think bad painting is incompetent painting. It's the same thing.
It doesn't have the charm.
Well, you know, incompetent painting without the charm is just incompetence. Mm. Mm. It's the charm that matters.
Yeah, well, look, I think the Gareth Sampson was really a very, very good show in the way that it was mounted, curated. It was very well put together. The fact that his last paintings were, for me, some of his best was, encouraging that a man, I don't know how old he is, but he's
in his 70s.
He's been doing it for a long time. And the fact that he can go work through into these quite well-constructed paintings.
He's famous for having his first solo show whilst in the first year of art school, and he went round to Murrumbina and asked Arthur Boyd if he'd open it, and Arthur Boyd went down there, opened his show. Gareth was about 19 years old at the time, and bought one of the paintings.
Really? Mm. Wow. Well, there's a start for you. So now, have you got something amazing to tell us today, Mark?
Well, look, John's really sort of taken away a lot of my fire there.
Oh.
Well. Woohoo!
But it won't, not for long.
He's back!
Not for long. So did you, also at Fed Square, there was, what was his name? Sorry, I'll get there. Past Legacy and Present Tense, which is a indigenous exhibition.
Yeah, must have missed that one.
On the third floor. I think there must be somebody who lives on the third floor who does indigenous exhibitions only. Is that correct, do you think?
I think the gallery there is the Australian Indigenous Gallery.
Oh, I see. That's why there's only Indigenous art up there. Yeah. Okay, because they keep changing some of the paintings, but there's often the same painting there each time, which I find quite interesting. I thought it was a little bit hypocritical in the sense that they're showing these lovely videos of people squatting on the floor dotting away, and the more I see them, the less they resonate. I find it it's like showing people in kindergarten. I'm not sure I really like seeing that on the process.
Well, like
the
Tom
painting.
Polo, well, it's exposing a bit like Tom, his processes in the foyer of the...
I think it takes away the mystery in many ways. And I come back to the idea of mystery in painting and how it's the most important aspect of it. And yet we seem to be sort of bringing it down to cutting it down so that it's becoming more and more open to people. I'm not sure I agree with that.
Demystification.
But what the one of the great paintings, getting back to Gareth Sampson, was his Wittgenstein's Brush with Vorticism.
Oh, yeah.
Which was, do you remember Vorticism was a very short-lived movement in Britain in the 20s, I think, with Wyndham Lewis and David Bomberg. And it was about the one which is on the cover, that's the painting, which is where it's the pinks of Bacon and the white and the, you know, it is very Bacon-esque, but it's still a very beautiful painting. Mm-hmm. But
why wouldn't it be a beautiful painting if it's if it's relying heavily on Bacon.
Well, this is what we're coming down to, is how is it that everyone is so influenced by Bacon and when you look at his paintings, you realise that he makes mess, or that, what did you call it, incompetent charm.
Charming incompetence.
But with such brilliant mastery that it's very, if you look at the background of his paintings, there's very, very rarely anything in the background.
I don't think there's anything incompetent about Francis Bacon's paintings.
No, you're right. I think you're right. I've said the wrong thing there. Thank you. Mm. I think it's very clear that he makes something very classic behind. His background's very classic, and he just puts the image on the top. Right. And it's so powerful that they don't know where to go from there. If you think of painting, where it's moved from since Picasso, since Bacon, it's still a bit lost, I think.
I have a couple of favourite apocryphal stories about Francis Bacon paintings. One is the one of the Batman movies. I think it had the Joker in it, and he was going through a mansion and destroying everything inside. He was in a very destructive mood. And he's completely off his nut, and he walked around a corner. He saw a Francis Bacon painting there, and he said, "Hang on, I like that one."
Really?
Yeah, famous.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I quite liked it too. And the other thing was Bacon's remarks about his own paintings. He made a series of paintings, very famous paintings of screaming popes.
Oh, yes, of course.
And when asked about it, he said, "I was trying to paint laughing popes."
Well, there's charming incompetence for you.
So, do you know Akira Makigawa? You knew him, isn't it? Did you know him?
Yeah, he had a studio below me in the building I was in Melbourne, and spent quite a bit of time with Akio.
Mm.
And he was a fabulous man, he was a small, muscular Japanese man who was very interested in sailing and bicycle riding.
Yes, he made sails.
And that kind of stuff, yeah. And a sincere intellectual.
Mm.
He was a terrific fellow.
Well, you can see that when you go, because they're not only just in the foyer, they're in the, they do that at Fed Square, which I think is quite good. You've got the exhibition spaces, and then you have the sculptures in, sort of lost space in between the floors.
Yeah, for a long time it was a bit of a sort of just a big grey void, that foyer, and there wasn't much going on. I used to walk in there and have a look around and thinking, I wouldn't mind whacking a painting of mine on the wall in there.
Yes. Well, I feel the same about sculptures, but it's true that when you go from NGV over to Fed Square, Fed Square is almost like NGV used to be. That there's that calmness and quiet, that you can move around easily.
Do you think that's the Australian collection at work?
No, I just think
it's architecture.
The architecture does work quite well, even though, as you say, it doesn't even do anything with the Yarra.
Yes, that's my complaint about the architecture, is that building has a back wall to it. No building like that should have a back wall, and that the back wall faces the river, which is even more stupid. And what was wrong with the gas and fuel building?
It would have made
a fabulous gallery. You can keep that finger to yourself, Will. Speaking of index fingers, I meant to suggest that Gareth Sampson's show is certainly worth going and looking at.
Yes.
It is a great show to go and look at.
And it's free.
But just beware of the fact that Gareth has got his index finger erect and firmly in your face.
Right.
And even written on some of the paintings, it either says, you're my bitch or I'm your bitch. I can't remember which, but it's much the same thing.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of, he likes dressing up like his mum. So there's a lot of that going on. You saw in one room, there's all the paraphernalia.
I remember there was a leather bird's head, which was absolutely beautiful looking thing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some beautiful objects.
Had a vaguely kind of scary sexual connotation.
Well, there's a lot of sexual connotation going on in all of his paintings, really, don't you think?
Absolutely, yeah.
And I agree with you. When you first walk into there's just too much imagery. There's too much going on, and you can't really, you're getting all this information. You can't really do anything with it until you come out, and then you see the Akira sculptures.
Too much noise, but
come down.
I think it's a beautiful balance.
Okay.
But it's a good show, definitely a good show.
You'll be in Central Australia.
Yes, Will and I are about to head off as soon as we turn off the mics here today. We're driving up for a night in. Where are we going to get to first, Will?
I think we might be at the Italian Workingmen's Club in Mildura tonight.
Ah, is that where they had the longest bar in the world?
We're going to find out this evening, I reckon.
And are they driving gloves in your back pocket there, Will?
They are, the leather driving gloves. And you like the little tweed hat?
Lovely.
Oh, we're all kitted out. And then I'm hoping that we're going to get up to Broken Hill soon after that. And the last time I went to Broken Hill was probably about 35 years ago with the Goanna Band.
Oh.
And I met a cockatoo there that drank beer at the bar. Do you think still be that wild?
Oh, I think so. They live a long time.
Yeah, 75 years.
Oh, 100 years. 100 years for a cockatoo. And that one particularly. He'll be an old soak at the bar. Probably got no feathers left, but he'll still be there.
Oh, I'm looking forward to
Broken Hill's fun. I think we'll have lunch in Broken Hill.
Yes. So did you know we're actually going up to see Midnight Oil?
Yep.
At the Alice Springs football ground, which will be quite an adventure.
And what's his name, the lead singer of that
band? Pete Garrett.
Yeah. He's presumably re-manifesting himself as Peter Garrett and not as a politician.
Yes, yes. I think he did that a while ago, actually. Mm. And they've just completed a world tour. And Alice Springs is the first of the Australian concerts. So we're meeting Tracy Hutchison up there, and who was an RPP presenter a little while ago. Hopefully we'll get her back in here again at some point.
Mm.
And, having a bit of a desert adventure, which was great, which is why I played that.
Glamping, holiday staying, and hotel staying.
Combination, isn't it? We're calling it a luxury holiday, but it's because we've got luxurious swags.
Right.
Well, we'll be sleeping on the ground a lot of the time in the swag, but there'll be a sprinkling of luxury motels here and there.
I'm really looking forward to it. So I'll be bringing some photographs. I might post some pictures up on the Facebook page while we're there.
It was my great fortune to spend some time in luxury motels when I was a child. My father liked taking us to luxury motels, and I can remember waiting eagerly in the morning by the little door that the breakfast came through for my...
Oh, that's what Will loves.
For my compote de frutte.
Look at him, he's laughing.
No, the fruit compote coming through the hole
and
in the wall.
And the tomato juice.
Yeah, and the toast wrapped up in tissues, so it's nice and soggy. Yeah. Oh, yes. They were the days. Yeah.
I wouldn't drink tomato juice in a fit.
Really? I love tomato juice.
V8 tomato juice?
No way.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, look, I think why don't we play a track of Midnight Oil just to get us in the mood, because we're about to head off there in a minute. And we're going to come back with something after that, I think.
Okay.
So I hear you've got a story for us.
Well, just a brief one, because I wanted to see if you could perhaps record the Midnight Oil concerts while you're up there and make you know, do a sort of a bootleg album. But I'm
on my phone.
Yes, I'm friends with the Dire Straits because they had a house in the south of France, and they're very sort of humble, lovely people. And I had another English friend who said, "Look, can you tell your Mark Knopfler that I've got a bootleg album that he might be interested in?" And so I spoke to Mark, and he said, "From what year?" It's in 1976. And he said, "Listen, that's the sort of thing that we'd pay gold for, because they can't get them themselves. They don't have these early recordings of their music played in some bar." And I said, "Okay." So they got together and they figured out something. And I said to the guy, "How did you manage to record these concerts?" He said, "Well, what we used to do was I'd act as if I was a paraplegic on a wheelchair, and we'd put all the recording gear under my legs with a blanket over me, and because I was considered a handicapped person, I was pushed to the front of the stage and I could record whatever I liked." And this is how they made their many, many bootleg albums.
Oh.
And of course, a lot of the people like Bob Dylan and Dire Straits, etc., they really love the fact that people have done that, because they're the only recordings they have of a lot of their concerts.
You just have to keep your ears open for various bodily functions.
Oh, okay. So maybe we need to be taking a wheelchair with us.
Well, I always take a wheelchair. Yeah. The AFL Grand Final, that's the way to go to that too. They push you straight up to the front.
Exactly.
And just a tartan blanket and off you go.
We used to be able to get tickets for the grand final from the Salvation Army.
You could just walk, just turn up, and you could walk around and just buy them from the salvos, and in you'd go. Mm. Now they're about $1 million a ticket.
Yeah,
you can't even stand up.
There's 5,000 standing room.
Are they still out?
Yeah, they
still are. In front of the television in the bar?
I think that still goes on too.
They don't even get out and see the game, a lot of the people, no? Yeah.
Hark!
Oh,
news.
It's time for the news. Now, as we mentioned, we had a great chat today with Sydney-based artist Tom Polo, who is researching the Mornington Peninsula Regional Gallery's collection and painting impressions of that collection in the Foyer Gallery. That painting is going to be remain there, I think, and through till the end of November. So go along, see him paint, or have a look at the painting.
I'm going to go down there, see if I can get my hands on the brush.
Mm.
So, local potter Madeline McCarthy has an exhibition at Antipodes featuring various forms of rabbits and hares. These live rabbits and hares?
No, they're not. And some of them are stirrup cups. They're rather beautiful porcelain things. They're gorgeous, actually.
It opened last weekend but runs until the 22nd of October.
Yes, I've put some images on the Facebook page, so if you want to have a look at some of those.
The Melbourne Festival has almost begun. Melbourne Festival, the 4th of the October to the 22nd of October, a feast for your imagination.
And at Whistlewood, who are great friends of the show, Susan and Emily McCulloch, From Nature, which is their spring salon exhibition, that'll be on until November the 12th. So
and in fact, Susan McCulloch's father, Alan McCulloch, collected many of the paintings that Tom Polo will be looking at.
Oh, of course he did. Yes, you're right. Mm. Yeah. We spoke to Susan last week about the show. On Friday the 6th of October, Queenslander's Carl S. Williams is going to be headlining at Moth with the Canadian female duo Twin Peaks, two of the country's most honest and mesmerising singer-songwriters. Carl's including Moth on his East Coast tour to promote his new single, Blood to Give.
So that means a lot of other singer-songwriters are dishonest?
Maybe, yeah.
Mm, interesting. The Jewish Museum of Australia has a music program running as part of Amy Winehouse, family
that's
portrait.
Amy Winehouse.
From October the 22nd until March 25th. Tickets for these events are now available.
Via thejewishmuseum.com.au. Hey, if you've just tuned in, you've missed out about, we'd love to hear from you. So if you visit our Facebook page, you can find links to some of the things we've been talking about on this show and also get a reminder about who and what's coming up in the next show. As I said, I'm away next week, so it's over to you two, Mark and John. So
that's going to be fun.
That'll be a fabulous program. So join them next Sunday at 11. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But we know what we like, and I like saying Val Lobster. Thanks, Brody.
Thanks, Brody.